Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to The Stuck Stops Here. This is LW Noli, presenting Season 4, Episode 3.
A long road and a hard way to an easy life. Cut me up, cut me down, using the same knife. Packed up all your bags and put them on a shelf. I'm all done fixing you, going someplace else. A little gray brings out the sun. Know when to stay, know when to run. The mess is yours, I'm all done. Rise, baby, rise. You denied all that was me, slowly tearing at the seams. Nobody lives and nobody dreams. Rise, baby, rise.
On today's episode, Tammy and I will be speaking with Marissa. Marissa's site on Instagram is @littlebent_notbroken. Today, she will share her story of surviving and healing from childhood emotional, mental, and physical abuse to help others in a similar situation or with a similar background feel seen and heard and to validate their experiences and emotions. Covert abuse in the form of narcissism or gaslighting can disconnect the victim from their inherent inner voice and their intuition. It is Marissa's mission to help other survivors reclaim their birthright of self-love and compassion and empower them to live their lives full of freedom, joy, and independence. Welcome, Marissa.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Oh, we are thrilled you're here, Marissa. So thank you. I always acknowledge to guests who publicly talk about their healing journey that it is so hard to just start one, stay on it, and then publicly share your story. So you're brave on many fronts.
Oh, thank you so much. And you too. You know, you inspire me. I love that we connected through Instagram. That was so great.
I love Instagram more and more every day.
Right. It's great. It has its faults, but overall, I think it's a great place.
Yeah. Agreed. So one of the first things I like to ask is how and why you became interested in breaking toxic cycles and generational trauma.
Yeah. I used to tell everyone that I didn't want to become my mom and that I had sworn off children because I just wanted no chance to become her. And people would say, well, just by saying that, you're not going to become her, like that awareness, you've broken it, whatever. And I was like, I don't think so. I don't want to take any chances with it. And then as I got older and I started, you know, dating and then I got into a really serious relationship, I realized like, oh, I don't need to have kids to become my mom. She's coming out in so many other ways. Like I'm snapping at my partner for the littlest things. I'm closing up over confrontation. Like the slightest hint of confrontation, I would completely close up. And he would be very nice, very respectful. And he'd be like, yo, I'm just trying to talk. Like, what's going on? And I'm like, I can't. There's nothing coming out. Sorry.
It's funny. I relate to what you say. I was saying I didn't want to be like my mother as a knee-jerk reaction without even being able to articulate why. It was visceral with absolutely no logic or reasoning behind it. So, I can definitely relate to that.
Yeah, that was definitely my reaction too. People would talk about kids and immediately be like, nope, I'm not having kids. Even if it wasn't about me, they weren't asking if I wanted kids. They were just talking about kids. And I'd be like, no way. Nope.
Right. It's automatic. I can say it's automatic and visceral. And sometimes we make decisions in our life based on that.
Exactly.
And sometimes they're good and sometimes they're not, it's, when you're raised in a toxic childhood, I think it's very hard to make good decisions, arising from authenticity.
Yes.
I know I find that, I'm trying not to speak for everyone else. I just do, in talking to people like yourselves, these knee-jerk reactions sort of get in the way of living, an authentic life.
Absolutely. Oh, I definitely agree. Yeah, I didn't hear about the term generational trauma until maybe 2 years ago, and I was like, what is that? And then I read a book about it and the epigenetics and everything, and I was like, this is crazy. Yep.
can you share with our listeners, a little bit about your childhood, if you're comfortable with that?
Yeah. My childhood was a mixed bag of things overall. Yeah. Looking back on it, it was pretty lonely. There was a lot of fear. I remember being scared of my mom and just walking around on eggshells, trying to not, set her off. I remember I was a very bubbly, energetic kid, and I just wanted to play and laugh and run and yell and, do all these things. And it irritated her to her core. She would blow up over it, and she'd be like, shut up, leave me alone, get away from me. And so I closed up really early. Like, I think around 7 years old is when I started fantasizing about running away, about leaving, about disappearing. And it sucked.
She was faulting you for being you.
Yes, exactly. That was like the overall... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. I want to do what was causing her rage. Do you know?
Yeah, I really don't know. I could give the answer that, people parent the way they're parented. I know she had a pretty rough upbringing as well. But I think a lot of it too was she was always stressed out from work. That's what I remember. Every day she'd come home and I'd ask her, oh, how was your day? And she's like, it sucked. And she'd start complaining about work and the toxicity at work, unrealizing that she was bringing that same toxicity home.
So as you went through, high school and college, if you went, or young adulthood, do you have any... experiences that, a rock bottom like experience or, realizations or moments that frightened you, upset you to the point where, you knew something wasn't right?
Yes. Yeah. So there were a few times, and I can think of, three instances where I feel like it was rock bottom. I mean, from high school into young adulthood, it was just a roller coaster of extreme highs and extreme lows. I'd get really depressed. The suicidal thoughts were really loud, overwhelming, and then I'd be fine and I'd be happy. And it was exhausting.
Peaks and valleys.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So the first instant was my senior year of high school. We had a choir concert. It was the last one of the year. And my choir director invited all of the seniors' parents on stage as like a last hurrah for the seniors. And I was the only one whose parents didn't show up. And I remember I was on stage, I feel like everyone in the audience is looking at me because I'm the only one that doesn't have a parent. All of my friends see that my parents aren't here. And I'm just like, well, this sucks. And I think in that moment too, like I stopped, something in me kind of broke to where I don't have that need now for my parents to support me, to be there for me. It just stopped. But then my friend's mom looks at me while we're on stage and she goes, hey, you can be my daughter for tonight. And it was so casual, so small. And I almost started crying. I almost broke down on stage in front of everybody. And I was like, oh my God. Cause I never felt support, and it was the smallest hint of support, but it was so overwhelming. But I held it together long enough to get in my car. And then I broke down. I full on wailed. I had never cried audibly like that before, but in the safety of my car, no one could tell me to shut up. No one could say, stop crying or give you something to cry about. I was able to just freely let it out. And that's when I was like, whoa, there is something so not okay going on in me right now.
That's a heartbreaking story. That is heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah. So every time I think about it, I get a little choked up. I'm not going to lie.
I'm sure.
I know it's very hard. I always use this term. This phrase, mourning the loss of people who are still alive.
Yes. Yeah. That's something I read about too, as I began my healing journey, that people talk about how if their parents were to die, they wouldn't, they wouldn't really care. They would feel nothing because they're kind of already dead to them anyway.
Yeah. So, and you're so, using plural, like how many people, like a lot of people. You just, the way you phrase that sentence, you have connected with a lot of people who feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is scary. I mean, what was your dad's role in, you know, did he enable your mother? Was, you know, was he just as angry as her?
He was definitely more passive. He never really stood up to her, never stood up for us as kids. So there was also that lack of support there because I couldn't run to him crying about it because then I was met with, well, that's just your mom. And oh my God, I hate that phrase so much. I hated hearing it growing up. I hate hearing it now.
It's a big excuse.
It is. It dismissed my feelings. It dismissed her actions and it hurt.
Did you ever think that? I'm sure it does. I believe you.
Yeah.
Does it ever make you, how has it affected your, you know, personal and professional life? Do you feel like you made any decisions that weren't great along prior to your healing journey? Because of, you know, lack of guidance? I mean, that's one of the things. I made a lot of terrible decisions, particularly professionally. So,
yeah. So I did go to college, but choosing which college to go through, I was kind of stranded. I didn't know what I wanted to study. I didn't know where I wanted to go to school. And then there were kind of restrictions around where I could go. I had to stay in state. I could only go to certain schools because my dad's a vet. So yes, I got to go to college for free, but on one hand, like it wasn't necessarily the path I wanted. So I don't like bringing that up though, because the wave of like you're ungrateful washes over me, but I know that I'm not. Anyway.
And yes, it's very easy for people to point the finger and then judge. But you didn't have any, the bottom line is you didn't have any, sounds like you didn't have any guidance.
I really didn't. So when I chose, I went to San Francisco State, which is about an hour and a half away on public transit. And I was living at home still and I was commuting and it was an hour and a half one way. So about 3 hours in total, I was working three jobs. I was in a sport. I was just doing anything I could to stay out of the house. And
wow,
it was exhausting. And I didn't realize at the time, I thought I was just trying to get out of the house, but really I was trying to just do things to not feel the pain, you know, distract myself.
I had an addiction to busyness, you know, and I talk about this a lot because we know we understand substance addiction, we understand alcoholism, but we don't understand an addiction to behaviors that keep us from being real.
Exactly.
And that perpetuates, you know, anxiety and depression.
Absolutely.
Which, you know, I had for years as a result of that. So what was the moment that you started your healing journey? What caused it? And what was that first step you took?
So the cause of it was definitely the commuting to school, working three jobs, being in a sport. And I hit burnout so hard. I think it was just my second semester. And I scheduled a doctor's appointment and to this day, I don't know if I actually had a physical ailment or if it was my subconscious being like, we need help. and I was sitting in her office and we were talking and then I just broke down crying. And I admitted for the first time out loud that I wanted to die. I wanted to step in front of, you know, I was having thoughts about stepping in front of the next train, about driving off the road, all of these things. And she was very taken aback, very surprised. And she immediately referred me to mental health services. And that was the first time I had ever really talked to anyone about what was going on. And that was really the catalyst that snowballed into my healing journey. I was in therapy in secret. I didn't tell my family. They didn't know I was taking antidepressants. I was in there for a few months. And then Thanksgiving of 2015, my parents found out because they sent a bill to the house. And I was driving home from house sitting for a friend and my mom calls me and she goes, what is this bill for psychotherapy? And I was like, oh, crap. okay, so I've been going to therapy. And she was like, why? And I said, I was driving. And I said, you know what? I don't know where this confidence came from, but I was like, you know what? I think we should talk about this when I get home. And she was like, fine. And she hung up and I pulled over into the nearest gas station. I started sobbing and I was like, oh my God, it wasn't supposed to be this way. And I get home and both of my parents are sitting, they're sitting in front of the dining, or they're sitting at the dining room table, which is as soon as you open the door, that's the first thing you see. And they're sitting there with their arms crossed, like they're ready to grill me, interrogate
me. Like an inquisition.
Exactly. Oh, and I walk in, I shut the door and I take a deep breath. And my mom goes, so what's going on? And I said, I'm in therapy because I am very stressed out and I have really bad depression. And she was like, what do you have to be depressed about? And I was like, without saying you, it's you.
Yeah.
And I told her, I said, you know, I'm stressed out from school. I'm stressed out from work. I'm stressed out when I come here because I feel like I can't breathe here. I'm always walking on eggshells. I can't take up space. All of these things. And I told her that the way she takes out her stress on everyone else is harmful to me. And she goes, well, that's just how everyone does it. I was like, no, it's really not.
I wrote a song about that. It's called Always Been the Way.
I'll have to listen to that.
Exact reaction you're describing.
Yeah.
Well, it was very brave of you at such a young age to get mental health help with zero support. That's incredible.
Yeah, thank you. It was definitely scary.
And it's amazing that your parents were threatened by it rather than proud of you that you went to try to heal yourself.
Yeah, I think about that a lot, how their first reaction was anger instead of, oh my gosh, like, how can I help you? What, you know, how are you? You know, and
because heaven forbid you should expose their behavior.
Absolutely.
Like the secret becomes real.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. And I mean, that was just the story of my life was I couldn't talk to them about anything, which is why now as an adult, it's so hard to have any kind of serious conversation. My boyfriend wants to like sit down and talk about how I don't know what I did. I did something. And he's very calm and collected. He's not yelling at me. He's not screaming at me. He's not going to like hurt me in any way. And I'm panicking. I'm shaking. My heart is racing. I'm hot. I'm, you know.
Wow.
So I'm still working on that. But yeah, so
that you've been conditioned to do that, you know?
Yes. Exactly. When you've had no one in your life to just talk to you like a human being, as an adult, as a person, and instead they scold you, they reprimand you, they threaten you, they scare you. You just walk through life thinking that's how everyone's gonna treat you, and
that's trauma.
It is.
So you walk in, and the mafia is sitting at the dining room table.
Yeah, exactly. My dad hasn't said a word. Exactly. My brother's hiding in his room because he knows that the storm is coming. My dad hasn't said a word. My mom is just – now she's saying that I'm an entitled bitch, that I'm ungrateful. I think I'm so entitled as a millennial. And I'm like, I'm entitled to therapy. Yeah, actually, I am. And it was Thanksgiving Day. So then I had to get ready for the family coming over. So I go in my room – and I'm trying to get ready. My dad comes in and we have a really nice heart-to-heart. Actually, it was very surprising because my dad is not one to express emotion. And he asked me, he was like, so what is going on? You know, what is happening? And I told him, I said, the way that she takes her anger and her stress out on everyone in this house is not okay. And he goes, well, that's just your mom. And I said, that doesn't mean anything. You know, that's not an excuse. I told him straight up. And it was the first time I'd ever talked back to my dad, and it was really scary. And he was like, okay,
you didn't talk back to him. You expressed a truth. But it's amazing how we automatically label it that way.
Yes, you are exactly right.
but I'm giving you more kudos. Keep going. I'm loving the story.
Thank you. So then he asked, you know, so what do you want to do? And I said, my goals in therapy are, one, I needed to talk to you guys, and two, I need to move out. And he goes, you can't move out. If you move out, you're cut off. And that's something he had said to me for a really long time, which is why I never moved out. And I asked him why. And why is it that way? And he goes, because that's the way it was for me. When I moved out, it was the last time I saw my dad. He used to live in the Philippines. He joined the Navy for the United States. And his dad passed away while he was at sea. So, and then I realized, I was like, oh, that's my dad's trauma. That's my dad's fear. So he thinks that if I move out.
Wait, can I clap for you for a second?
Oh, thank you.
Bravo.
All right, go ahead, keep going.
So his fear is that if I move out, he'll never see me again. And I told him, I said, Dad, it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to be like that. I can come visit. I won't be far. I'm going to school like 45 minutes away, you know? And he was very hesitant, very reluctant. And then the entire time in the background, my mom's slamming doors, yelling about God knows what. And he just kind of, it kind of registered. And he was like, okay.
Wow. So that's amazing.
That's unbelievable.
It was very shocking. It was very surprising. And he said, okay, well, I think you and your mom need to talk and we can have your grandma moderate. And I was like, maybe we'll
That's
see.
His
that never
mother
actually
or
happened,
her but, mother? Whose mother?
My mom's mother. Yes. Yeah.
That didn't happen.
It didn't happen, but so it was Thanksgiving Day. We went about our day like normal. I'm helping them clean up after everyone leaves. And my mom and I have this like standoff in the living room of like, who's going to say something first? Because I was house sitting that week. So I needed to leave and go take care of their pets and stuff. And we just kind of stare at each other. My mom goes, I'm sorry that I made you feel that way.
Wow.
And I was like, well, that's as good of an apology as I'm going to get. That's big for her. I can recognize that. So I will take it. We did this like the most awkward hug you could imagine. And I left. And then a few days later, we went to lunch and we talked and she seemed to be a little bit calmer, but that's how it goes. You know, she's blowing up one day and calm the next.
Yep.
And I went to therapy the next week and she goes, so how's your Thanksgiving? And I said, well, my parents found out about therapy. And she goes, oh, shit. I tell her the entire story. And she was like, so everything that we have been working on these last few months happened in the same day or, you know, are happening.
I hadn't moved out yet.
And we were both just, we both sat there and I remember we both were just so speechless. We were shocked. I didn't know how to feel because it was like all of this weight I had been carrying for 18 years of my life was kind of gone. It felt, it was amazing. And she just kept asking, you. Thank you. She just kept asking, so how do you feel? And I was like, I really don't know. This is a foreign feeling to me. I've never felt relief. I've never been able to breathe.
Wow.
Yeah, I look back on that day a lot and I try to remember that feeling because it's so empowering. It felt so good. So I did move out. I moved out twice. So the first time I moved out, I moved into a one bedroom, one bath with five other girls. Never do that. Don't ever do that.
One bath with five girls? No way.
One girl like dyed her hair blue. There was blue dye all over the bathroom. It was gross. Anyway, and then I moved into my own place. One bedroom, one bath, a giant kitchen. It was really nice. I ended up getting a dog, and I thought I was healed. I was like, cool. I live on my own. I'm living in San Francisco with my dog. Like I'm fine. I'm totally fine now.
It was like a movie ending.
Yes, exactly. But that's not how life works, you know? And then I graduated college. I got a full-time job. I was dating at the time. And I was still kind of depressed. I was still really sad. There were days where I could not get up. I used to call out of work a lot.
Were you still in therapy at that point or had
you
stopped?
No, we had stopped. My therapist and I agreed that we accomplished everything I needed to. So it was probably a good time to end our sessions. And then I wanted to go back, but I just kept saying, oh, I don't have time. Oh, I can't afford it. Oh, I can't do this. I can't do that. I kept making excuses for not, you know, putting my mental health first because I had always been under the impression that you don't go to therapy unless you're in crisis. And that's not true. That's something I have learned. You should. Everyone should. I strongly believe everyone should go to therapy. Shitty childhood or not, go to therapy. Like,
why not?
No, I want to preface a good therapist.
Yes.
Because I do a ton of reading, and there's a lot of them that don't really, and this is probably changing, but that are not familiar with, you know, shall we say, narcissism you know, the toxic parenting and the generational trauma, which is a fairly new topic.
Yeah, there are not a lot of trauma-informed therapists and coaches and healers. That's, I think that is something that's changing, though. I think that's now being a requirement as you go through the education system.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, but it's true that there are still a lot of people who don't have that experience or that training or education, and that can be very harmful for trauma survivors because it can be dismissive. It can just be, you know, more harmful than good.
Marissa, I'm sorry, Tammy. Yeah. How did your brother? What happened with your brother during all this? How was his reaction, or how did this affect him?
You know, I really don't know.
So you've never talked about this?
Mm-mm. We never talked about it. He would just kind of ignore what was happening. He would hole himself up in his room. He always had headphones on. And he's 18 now. And I try to have a conversation with him about, like, because I can see it. I can see that it's affecting him too. But he stands up for himself in like a different way than I did. You know, if my mom is telling him to do something while he's already doing something, he's like, I can't do it. I'm busy, you know? And I'm like, yay.
So he doesn't let her push him around.
Not usually. There's still
a
lot of
opinion. Does she treat him differently than you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. He was my mom's favorite, but he definitely, he's developing a father wound. I think he and my dad kind of have the same clash that my mom and I did in a different way. Cause like I said, my dad is pretty passive, but there are some things that he's trying to live vicariously through my brother. And, so yeah, it's definitely affecting him. Side note, one time I was talking to my mom and she goes, "So your brother was talking to the school counselor and they say that he's depressed." And I was like, I mean, I don't, I believe it. Is he getting help? Like what's happening? And she's like, "Yeah, he's just talking to the counselor, but they're talking about therapy." And I was like, yes.
She talks
about
it.
Did you not
learn
with your first child?
Right. It's not a bad word.
She whispers it. Yeah. No, it's like you say jail or cancer.
Right.
Or therapy. Yeah, I love that.
It's a stigma. Wow.
It is. And I remember asking her too when we had that lunch after she found out about my therapy. She said, like, you know, I had been told by many doctors I should go to therapy, but instead I went to church counseling. And I was like, oh my God.
She should have listened.
So, yeah, exactly. So I want to ask you a couple more questions, Marissa. So what books, videos, you know, podcasts, and you don't have to say mine, even though I have a gun pointed to your head. Please ignore that. No, but on a serious note, what can you share resources that you have used that, you know, our listeners could access?
Yeah. I think the first book that I had read that it wasn't necessarily like a healing book, but I read The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, and that really did help me.
Oh, I know that book. Absolutely.
Yeah. It really helped me like relinquish control. I had a problem with control of and anxiety and needing everything to go my way. And it just really helped me like loosen the grip and not take things personally. Like that was another thing I had to work on. And then Instagram, like we've talked about, Instagram has been a really great resource. I think the first post that really opened my eyes to the healing world of Instagram was this post on gaslighting. And I never heard that term before. I didn't know what gaslighting was. And there were two parts of the post that stuck out to me. And it was, you know, the red flags of gaslighting. And it was when you try to explain how you feel, they're dismissive. They say you're overreacting or too sensitive. and bells started going off in my head. And then I saw they insist it didn't happen this way. You find yourself questioning your beliefs and your opinions. If your point doesn't match theirs, it's wrong. And I was like, what? I finally had something to describe my mom, because before, when I would talk to people, because I would overshare and I'd talk about my depression and my relationship with my mom, and I would talk about what she would say and do, and but I could see it didn't strike a chord with them. They didn't quite get it. They were like, oh yeah, my mom's a bitch too. Oh yeah, my mom, you know, yells at me too. And I'm like, no, but it's so different. Like, it's more than just yelling. It's more than just calling me a bitch. It's her hiding food from me. It's her telling me, oh, it didn't happen that way, or oh, you're remembering it wrong, or oh, I never said that. And it was driving me crazy. So to have something to be like, this is what she's doing, look at this, it was very empowering.
So, you know, there's a book that was written a long time ago called Men, Women Are From Venus, Men Are From Mars, or Men Are From Venus, Women Are From Mars. Mm-hmm. I like to say, if you're on a healing journey, you're on Mars. If you have no idea that you should be on a healing journey, you live on Venus. So, because what happens is you're around people that just, yeah, my mom yells too. That's what?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I'll have people say to me, sadly, I'm much older than you, but I'll have people say to me, oh, you're into that psychology thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're into that woo-woo.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay. You just exposed your fear of it. So thank you.
Yeah.
Right.
Not on the same wavelength. That's fine.
Yeah. So that's you know, that's one of the things you might run into is that it's kind of, I always call it, it's lonely at the top of the mountain of awareness.
Definitely. Oh, I like
that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
We've met a lot of people and speak to a lot of people who have gone through these things. I mean, you're not alone, and none of us are alone. Listeners, you're not alone. There are so many people who have been going through these kinds of generational trauma and trying to figure out what's wrong with me. Why is this happening to me? And it's really a wonderful, the healing journey is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and that's why I do speak about my journey. I know I haven't had like a big T trauma. I guess this is considered little T trauma, but it's trauma. And that's my whole mission. That's my whole mission with my Instagram page is I just want to help one person feel less alone, help one person who was in the same place I was in that didn't know the terms, didn't know about reparenting, didn't know about gaslighting or narcissism or anything like that. And just give them, just empower them, you know, give them a voice, give them tools and resources. I think for me, I do align with the spiritual aspect of healing too. So one of the books I read was Super Attractor by Gabby Bernstein. And
oh,
that was very
she's
helpful.
Awesome.
She's great.
She's
and
fantastic.
That book opened up like a whole nother level in my healing journey. And it was so helpful. I have like the deck of cards that I go through every day for affirmation and reminders. I did listen to some podcasts. I used to follow Dr. Nicole LaPera, the holistic psychologist on Instagram. A lot of her work is very helpful.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I follow her. That's right. I forgot that was her name. I just say holistic psychologist. So she's fantastic. Brilliant.
She puts out a lot of good work. And that definitely did help me in the inner child healing part of my journey. And I think in self-healing in general, because like I said, I hadn't been going to therapy. And a lot of her posts were very, very, very helpful in just finding the words and empowering and making me feel like, oh, I'm not crazy. Like, this is a thing that's happening. When I shut down, this is a biological response to what I perceive or what my body and brain perceive as trauma. So if you haven't followed Licensed Therapists on Instagram, I highly recommend it. You put out a lot of free, helpful content, and you can have like a mini therapy session every day. So
you're absolutely right.
That's great.
First, I want you to read, tell us what your t-shirt says, because it's one of my favorite sayings.
Oh, it says, what does it say? Grow through what you go through.
Amen. And then It's one of my favorite sayings. Any last words of wisdom coming from such a young but very old soul, young person, old soul?
Definitely.
I would love to hear what you have to say. You know.
Yeah, there's so much. So I'm just going to read what I had written. I know that sure. In my experience, the combination of fear as well as hope that your abuser can change will keep you stuck. That can keep you rooted in a relationship, in an environment that is harmful to you. So my advice is that you have to give yourself permission to leave, to live your life. No one's going to give you that permission. It is highly unlikely that your abuser, who is most likely unaware that they're abusing you, is going to say, oh, wow, you know what? I have been an asshole. You can totally leave. I'm so sorry. We are all worthy and capable of living an empowered life full of freedom, love, and independence. And that isn't to say you have to do it alone. Unfortunately, in my case and in Tammy's case and a lot of our cases, you know, we did have to pull ourselves up out of the darkness by ourselves. But I knew at the end of the day, I did have people who could support me within their capacity. They might not have understood all of it, but they loved me and they wanted the best for me. Sorry, my cat's
That's fantastic. Yeah, that is fantastic.
Thank you.
Marissa, we'd really appreciate your courage and your honesty. There's not enough of it in this world.
Oh, thank you so much. Could I have one more piece of advice?
Yeah, please.
I'm so sorry.
Of course.
Please.
Okay. My second piece of advice would be to not make a problem out of something that hasn't happened yet. So that planning for the future, wanting a better life for yourself is equal parts. What's the worst that could happen so that you can prepare, but also what's the best that could happen so that you can manifest and look forward to something. So take the answers to both of these questions, explore the root of the fear, or start planning for the future you want, and know that it's never too late to begin investing in yourself.
Okay. Bravo.
That's great. You know, and that's one of the things I used to do is proactively solve a problem before it ever even surfaced. What a waste of damn time that was.
Right. It's exhausting. You just feel like, oh, this is going to go wrong and then this is going to go wrong. And I have to make sure I'm on top of everything. It's exhausting.
It's a self-defense mechanism and control. You know, you're trying to prevent.
Definitely.
You know, you're so used to walking on eggshells all these years that you have to prevent things from happening. And that's unfortunate.
Absolutely.
That is true. And it's the kind of exhaustion that hypervigilance instills in you is never cured by sleep.
Yes. Amen.
Does not
exactly.
Cure, does not. But so on that note, we are going to let Marissa go take care of her cat.
Thank you. Thank you again so much. Thank you for having me. It was so nice to meet you guys.
Thank you.
Hope to have you back on again.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Long road and a hard way to an easy life. Cut me up, cut me down using the same knife. Packed up all your bags and put them on a shelf. I'm all done fixing you, going someplace else. A little gray brings out the sun. Know when to stay, know when to run. The mess is yours, I'm all done. Rise, baby, rise. You denied all that was me, slowly tearing at the seams. Nobody lives and nobody dreams. Rise, baby, rise. One-way conversation, no one satisfied. Built myself a cage with rotten things inside. Against my mouth, ready for the ride. Back to where it started, with nothing left to hide. A little grave.